Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I am out on the ledge with you and Kim Atkins' story. Because, you know, in our podcast, Sisters-in-Law, it's you and me, girl. We're always the two that are out on the ledge worried about the future of democracy. And I live on that ledge. I mean, I have a sleeping bag and a TV out there because I don't
We set it up real nice. We made it comfy.
It's good, the ledge. I think it's smart to be realistic. I don't believe in sugarcoating what's going on. I think that that would be dangerous.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and this is Justice by Design, a podcast that is focused on finding solutions to the issues we face together as a society. And I think there is no issue that I talk about more or more, no issue that is more front of mind for me than protecting democracy, the basic way our government functions for the people, a government by the people, not one of autocracy or oligarchs or despots. But how do we all get there? What is the role that each of us has to play? Well, you know what? A good friend of mine and someone who you all probably know very well is writing a book about just that. It's called Giving Up is Unforgivable, A Manual for Keeping a Democracy. And the author is my friend, my sisters-in-law co-host, Joyce Vance. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Kim. How you doing?
Thank you so much. I'm great. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so excited to have you.
I'm glad to be with you.
So you need no introduction, but I always ask my guests to introduce themselves briefly. So if there is a listener somewhere who doesn't know who you are, they can get to know you a little bit better. So tell us a little bit about what you do.
So I'm a mom of 4 kids, mostly grown up. My husband less grown up. I teach at the University of Alabama School of Law, and I teach in the area of criminal law and constitutional law. And of course, like Kim, I talk on television on MSNBC and NBC. And I also co-host a great podcast, hashtag Sisters-in-Law, with Kim, Barb McQuaid, and Jill Winebanks. I do another podcast with my former U.S. attorney colleague, Preet Bharara. I was an Obama-era U.S. attorney in Birmingham, Alabama, and Preet and I talk about insider stuff every Tuesday. And then last but not least, I write a Substack newsletter called Civil Discourse almost every night. You know, it didn't start out that way, and I bet you feel the same way about this podcast, Kim. I thought Civil Discourse would just be every once in a while I would write about an interesting issue at the intersection of law and politics. And here we are.
Well, they keep coming at us. They keep coming at us. And your Substack is the fertile ground from which this book arose. So let's start by just that. How did you come to write this book? How did you settle on this topic and really giving us a how-to guide for strong democracy?
Well, it was almost by accident. I actually got an email from an editor at Penguin Random House, Nick Amphlett, who is now a dear and trusted friend. And Nick had read a column that I wrote right after the election, where I essentially pushed the theme of we cannot afford to give up. We lost an election. We didn't, you know, lose the country. And he said, could you write a book about this? The column was about maybe 800 words. And because I didn't understand what was involved in writing a book, and because I do feel, I mean, we all feel, right, in this moment, a real obligation to country and to our fellow citizens. And so I said, sure, I'll write a book. And he said, great, let's make it a crash book. And again, because I know nothing about writing books, I didn't know that at that point I should have said no and run for the hills. Because a crash book means you write it fast. So we settled on the book and the topic in late January, and I delivered a book back to them the first week in June with 2 college graduations on different ends of the country and 1 brand new puppy in the middle of all of it. It has been an adventure.
And we haven't even mentioned the chickens and everything else that we're...
It's something every day.
Well, I'm so glad that you carved out some time with me today. So where do we even start, Joyce? I mean, I feel like every day there is another example, not just of the current president's complete disregard for the Constitution and how it works and the balance of power, and the fact that the government, as I mentioned, is by and for the people. It's not by and for him. Just this week, there's also evidence, obviously, of people who are capitulating, right? So I am a graduate from Columbia University. I got my master's degree there. And I've just been gutted at the way that that institution really became the first to reach a settlement that to me is a capitulation to the demands imposed by this government that are not aimed at making the school better. They're not aimed at addressing anti-Semitism, which is a really important issue that needs to be addressed. It's a way to demand that they kowtow and bend a knee to him and walk away from policies that have ensured the ability of people like me to be able to go there, to be able to have that opportunity and to be seen and to have us learn as a student body from one another. I feel that something is really lost in that. So when we're looking at that, maybe let's start with universities and education. Why do you think those are being attacked? And what can people do besides me and my little protest? So I put, you know how Clarence Thomas put a 15-cent sticker on his Yale degree because he was angry at the school for implementing affirmative action after his graduation. Well, I'm doing it for a different reason. I put my 15 cents on my Columbia degree. Besides that, what can we do to let people know that this isn't acceptable, but while at the same time supporting students in these universities right now to ensure that they get the experience that they need to be better citizens?
The university question is so fundamental, especially with Columbia now, you know, the Paul Weiss of universities, Paul Weiss mm-hmm. being the first law firm to capitulate. I understand why people might want to make difficult decisions to keep an institution afloat for what they perceive as a temporary period. I respectfully disagree with those sorts of decisions, just like you do. I think ultimately, you know, where we have to look at, and I'll tell you something that just sort of came upon me without deliberately thinking of it early in the Trump administration, where everything went bad so fast and so all at once. And I felt like there was nothing to hold on to. And I realized that I really needed an anchor. And so for me, that anchor was history and law. And I'll tell you, it feels a little bit cheesy in an era where the Supreme Court relies on tradition and custom and history to reach some of the most wrong results imaginable, right? They're always saying, well, history. And then they rely on some guy who was in favor of burning women at the stake as witches. But I mean it in a very sincere way. I found it to be comforting to turn to the country's historical documents, to the Constitution, to the Federalist Papers, to material that I frankly had not read. Maybe I'd reread some of it, like the law, the Constitution in law school, but some of it not since college. And I found such very moving content in those documents, especially in the Federalist Papers with Hamilton and Madison trying to sort of hash out the rationale for the new form of government. And what the Federalist Papers really are, they're trying to get citizens in New York to vote for the new Constitution. So they're making their most persuasive case, but they're also doing a lot of explanatory work and explaining, for instance, why they believe that factionalism would be so dangerous and would break the country apart, which is, of course, what we're seeing right now with MAGA, and why they believe they've constructed a government that is, at least in some sense, faction-proof. And that, I think, is the answer to your question about education, right? Why is Trump attacking universities? Well, what he's doing is he is attacking democratic institutions, whether it's the big marquee ones like Congress and the courts, or this sort of second tier law firms, the media, universities, that spawned the people who think and who understand and who will keep Donald Trump from becoming what he wants to be, a dictator.
Yeah.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I think that's so important to keep that in mind, because people may just think, okay, it's a fight between Trump and these individual institutions, but it's something so much bigger than that. I mean, we often see when we look at history and what happened during World War II or leading up to World War II, for example, institutions were among the first universities were among the first institutions that were attacked by Hitler, because they understand that the more educated that people are about what's going on, including learning from our history, and the more we have spaces where people exchange ideas, and those include dissent, and those include different views, the more you have that, the harder it is for autocracies and dictatorships to take power, because that empowers the people, and you need to strip the people of that power in order for that to be effective. So this is a long game here. It's not just, you know, a battle of wills. It's something that is so important. And I wish that Columbia joined in other universities in holding stronger on that. But speaking of law, something that has really been, disappointing to see this week, there was a report in Pumpernickel. It was in the New York Times, right? That broke down all the laws.
Pumpernickel carries over.
Yes. I only do it with you. It was a New York Times report that showed all the times that the Trump administration defied or tried to defy a court order. Okay,
correct. Right.
And Pumpernickel. Just this week, there was a really just striking New York Times report that pointed out all the times that the Trump administration has either defied or tried to defy by eluding court orders. 1 in 3 court orders that has been issued against the Trump administration has been either defied or flouted in some other way. That is such a shocking fact to begin with. But add to that the Supreme Court continuing to allow the Trump administration to move, even if to do things that lower courts have told them not to. Just the most recent one is firing all the Democratic members of the Consumer Product Safety Board. Now, think about it. Do you want your cribs, your baby cribs, to not, you know, collapse and suffocate your kids? Or do you want to know that the paint that's in your house doesn't have lead in it? I mean, I like that, but the people who are in the pockets of corporations may not. So how do you explain a Supreme Court that is basically letting this president get away with flouting the Constitution? And again, what tools do we have to fight back?
So look, I know this is going to come sorry, it's allergy season in Alabama. I know this is going to come as a huge surprise to you. I am not a fan of the conservative majority on this Supreme Court.
What?
Are you shocked? I mean,
I had no clue, Joyce.
Look, I don't know what's going on. I think people have plenty of suspicions. I try to not be a conspiracy theorist, but I look at some of these decisions and what I see is, you know, at some sense, at some level, there's this very meta conversation going on about the powers of the presidency and Article 2 of the Constitution and this real long trajectory among Federalist Society Republicans who wanted to see a unitary presidency where the president would reclaim power over the executive branch. We have this history and tradition, something the court usually honors, of executive branch agencies who have, to some level, independence. DOJ is the big one, right? Because everybody understands post-Watergate. You don't want the president reaching into the Justice Department and saying who can and can't be prosecuted. You want those decisions to be made on the basis of the facts and the law and nothing else. If you're going to be the cabinet level agency whose name is a moral virtue, justice. But there's also independence in these other agencies that have expertise, right? Agencies that used to rely on science, which has fallen into disfavor in this administration. And so there's this war being waged by Donald Trump on that sort of independence in his own agency. He wants to fire anybody he wants to fire. He wants to supplant policies. He wants to indict people who he thinks need to be indicted. All this stuff that I think is very much antithetical to what the founding fathers envisioned, but what many in conservative circles have long desired. And there is a majority on this Supreme Court that is bought in, at least to a large extent, on unitary executive theory. I sort of think that that's actually what we're watching happen. And the weird thing is that this Supreme Court majority doesn't understand that that's not happening in a vacuum, that they can't give Donald Trump all this power and then move on to have the conservative president of their dreams, because Donald Trump will take that power. And once he holds it entirely in his hands, he will change America forever. The Supreme Court is supposed to be drawing the line on that. That is their constitutionally assigned duty. So you asked, what can we do about it? I am a big believer in elections and the power to vote. Donald Trump and Republicans would not be telling you your vote doesn't matter unless they understood it really does matter. It matters a lot. They're going to make it hard for us to vote in 2016. What year am I in? In 2026. They're going to make it hard.
I don't
know
what day it is most days, Joyce, so I get it.
Girl, like, I've been asking my husband all week. I'm glad it's not just me. But 2026 is going to be, I mean, I know everybody's sick of this, and I say this out loud in my book. We're so sick of being told the next election is the most important one of your life.
Yeah.
Well, by God, 2026 is it, folks.
Yeah, Joyce, I get the frustration with people, because often when people want to know what to do, and we say vote, and they're like, well, we always say vote, and that it doesn't, that it gets frustrating. But you are absolutely right. If they are making voting harder, there is a reason for that. So it's not just about making sure you have what you have. What you have to do is to check in with your family, check in with people at your church, check in with the other parents at your schools, your kids' schools, and everyone in your community to say, hey, have you checked and made sure that you are registered to vote? Because sometimes names get purged off registration rolls, and you may have to go jump through some hoops to make sure that you're back on, but that's something, you know, make sure that you do that and check again a certain number of weeks before the election based on when the deadlines are.
90 days. You can't be removed from the voter rolls less after that 90-day mark.
Right. Know your local voting rules and dates and deadlines. Put them in your calendar just to remind yourself to double check that. Remind your loved ones and your friends to do the same way. That's really powerful. That's a powerful way to remind people of how important it is. There are also people who are checked out who feel just really dispirited and are wondering how important elections are anymore. Tell them that they are. Write postcards, urge people to get out, even in other states. There is a lot of power in that. And I also think there's a lot of power in speaking to your elected officials all the way up from the local level to your members of Congress and letting them know how you feel about everything, including election laws and procedures. They work for you. And hearing from you does make a difference. I know it makes a difference at Congress. I've been in congressional offices as a reporter and heard the phones ringing off the hook and heard people saying what they mean. And it gets through. It does matter, and it does make a difference there. And so you really do have some power and a vote and a voice in all of that. Joyce, my question for you is, I'm a little worried that democracy will continue to fray even before your book has a chance to be published and is available to everyone. By the way, the book is available for pre-order wherever you buy your books.
Look, I have a mock-up. It's so cool.
Oh, that's very convenient, Joyce. Thank you for the visual for those watching on video.
Very exciting.
But, you know, that comes out in October, but what happens if the Supreme Court continues to allow Trump to move forward? We're watching very carefully things like the birthright citizenship case continue to make its way through the courts. That's really major. Also, if, you know, by the time you know, we get favorable rulings if they are coming that protect the Constitution. There's so much damage that's already done. I know people here in DC who are packing up and leaving because they've lost their federal jobs and they can't afford to stay here anymore and they have to go off and do other things. So as we're seeing all, or, you know, people, friends who are calling with family members who are being detained in just horrible, gut-wrenching stories about that.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Are we going to have time to rebuild the democracy if it's being destroyed this quickly, Joyce?
I mean, you know, the extreme example is when you look at countries that became democracies and then began to backslide. Poland is a great example, right? Mm-hmm. Where they used the electoral process to regain, and they're starting to make headway. I think the mistake that we all make is that we think history is linear and that progress is linear and that gains once made can't be taken away from us. And the sad truth of our era is understanding that that's not the case, that gains can be taken away. It doesn't mean that we get out of the fight. And so, Kim, you will love this. I was up in Maine with my daughter last week, mm-hmm. and we were out eating, you know, like these places where you go and you get a whole lobster, and probably people are going to hate me for eating lobster, but it's just delicious. And this woman walks up to me, and I have like butter up to my wrists, and she says, "I am out on the ledge with you and Kim Atkins' story." Because, you know, in our podcast, Sisters-in-Law, it's you and me, girl. We're always the two that are out on the ledge worried about the future of democracy. And I live on that ledge. I mean, I have a sleeping bag and a TV out there because I don't
We set it up real nice. We made it comfy.
It's good, the ledge. I think it's smart to be realistic. I don't believe in sugarcoating what's going on. I think that that would be dangerous. We are at an unprecedented fragile moment for our democracy. We may lose more before we hit rock bottom. I think we have to accept that that is a possibility. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing about American democracy. It's not just Donald Trump sitting in the Oval Office in Washington. We have a multi-level democracy, and these democratic principles are baked in at every level of the process. Local government is very powerful. Who your mayor is determines whether or not your trash gets picked up efficiently and on time.
That's right.
State government, equally important. And so I think you sort of have to pick your poison and figure out where you're going to fight. And if, as seems to be the case, the Supreme Court just can't get its act together in this incarnation of the court, and if they erode more progress, we have to fight at the state level, at the local level where we can. And the important thing about this moment in time is it would be so freaking easy to just give up, right? Trump is so overwhelming. There's this sort of popular mythology in which he's inevitable. And y'all, this guy is a street bully. He is someone who is poorly educated. Yeah. You would not let him play with your four-year-old. I still don't understand how Americans elected him not once, but twice. I mean, there's this horrible story about the way he took advantage of his niece, Mary, and her brother after their dad died, lying to them and stealing from his, own, you know, family. So I think something that we need to do is stop giving Donald Trump credit, stop bending over backwards to pretend like he's a legitimate president. He isn't. We're past that. And as democracy continues to take hits, I think our job is to be accurate observers. We need to stay engaged and understand what's going on and spread the word of it. So there's a chance that we could come back. Let me just tell you two quick things that gave me hope this week, too, because I'm a big believer.
That was going to be my last question to you. So that's perfect.
Well, there we go. I'm a big believer in having these small conversations with people and not expecting that progress will be immediate, right? I mean, it might be years, and both of these stories actually are. I have a friend who is such a smart, bright woman, just liberal baked into every fiber of her being. And this has been an overwhelming experience for her. She did not expect, you know, to spend the final years of her career in this. And so she unplugged. She simply walked away from it, went on living, you know, her life, tried to be happy, tried to ignore the bad stuff, felt like that was the only thing that she could do. And in the last couple of weeks, I have watched her reengage. I have watched her tone change. The amount of attention she's paying has changed. I believe she'll be out with me at the next protest. Signs like that are hopeful that people are coming back. But the one that really blew me away is I have a dear, dear friend, a former colleague, a great guy who believes in justice to the core of his soul. But he was one of those people who was just inexplicably attracted to MAGA, a Trump voter every time he was on the ballot. Was upset by what was happening at the border, all of the Trump things, right? Mm-hmm. And really, really strange, because someone who had really promoted women and had really promoted Black people and really believed in all that, I've never understood how those folks get sucked in by Trump. But, you know, for him, the bridge too far was watching Trump try to take over the Justice Department. And he has just really, in the last few days, sort of smacked himself in the head and said, you know, what the F was I thinking? That gives me hope too. And, you know, that's very niche, right? The former Justice Department employee for whom things finally go too far. But I think everybody's got their niche. And so you just have to figure out what to talk with people about.
Everybody has their line. I mean, we've seen that even within MAGA. There's everybody who has their line. And we also know that this president, despite everything that he's doing, he has a propensity for backing down in the face of opposition. He does. He's done it with tariffs. He's done it with the Epstein fiasco. He has a way of backing down and backtracking, and he hears what the public reacts to. So that's why I think, particularly with this president, keeping your voice strong, keeping your voice consistent, and doing what you can to resist, it matters. It may feel daunting, but it really does matter. Listen, Joyce, I am among those people that sometimes, you know, I think, and I was thinking it even this week because I was a little under the weather, and that's when, you know, my resolve can be a bit weakened when the body is weak. And it's like, is this worth it? Am I even making a difference? Am I just screaming into the void? Am I just part of the, you know, the partisan divide, which is making the road back to democracy worse, not easier? And just in that way, it's almost as if I spoke it into the universe. I hear back from people or hear from people in various parts of my world who expressed how something that I've written or something that I said made them think or really hit home or made them understand something better. And I thought, okay, well, that's it. I asked a question to the universe and the universe told me, yeah. It's a lot, but you keep doing what you're doing because it is the right thing. And that's what I get hope from. I get hope from seeing other people do it too. I will see other people working hard or doing something that's incredible. And I'm like, okay, I can't sit on my hands while there are people that are really putting themselves out there at a time that it's perilous to do so. I can't do that. So I need to keep going. And I appreciate you for keeping us going too, and in writing this book so quickly, because I agree with you. Giving up really is unforgivable.
Well, thank you for having me. This is fun.
This was Joyce Vance. Thank you so much for joining me. And thanks to all of you for listening to Justice by Design. I will be back next week with another episode. But in the meantime, please make sure to follow this podcast wherever you get your pods. And you know what? Follow hashtag sisters-in-law too, if you are not doing that, because we have just as much fun over there. You take care of yourselves, and I will see you next week. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.